Senate will come to order. Messages from the House.
February the 9th, 2011. From the House of Representatives, third reading passed. Mr. President, the bills listed below passed the House on third reading by the vote indicated. House Bill 184, Minimum Wage Statutes Repeal. House Bill Number 248, Unlawful Protesting of a Funeral Amendments. Ayes 55, noes 4, excused 1. House Bill Number 259, Ethanol Producer Tax Credit. Ayes 58, noes 1, excused 1. House Bill Number 260, Industrial Siting Financial Resources. Ayes 52, noes 7, excused 1. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk. February the 9th, 2011, from the House of Representatives. Message, third reading, passed, amended. Mr. President, the bills listed below pass the House on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. House Bill 163, Water Produced from Geologic Sequestration. Ayes 43, no 16, excused 1. House Bill Number 208, Off-Road Vehicle Registration Exemption. Ayes 58, noes 1, excused 1. House Bill Number 241, School Districts Assessment Substitute Bill 1. Ayes 58, noes 1, excused 1. House Bill Number 246, National Guard Disposal of Land. Ayes 58, noes 1, excused 1. House Bill 207, Protection of Activities in Private Vehicles. Ayes 36, noes 23, excused 1. And House Bill Number 235, Natural Gas Vehicle Substitute Bill 1. Ayes 33, noes 26, excused 1. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk.
House bills on first reading. House Bill 259, first reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 259, Ethanol Producer Tax Credit, an act relating to taxation and revenue, sponsored by Representative Dave Zwanitzer. Passed the House on third reading, ayes 58, noes 1, excused 1.
House Bill 259 has been referred to Committee Number 3, Revenue. House Bill 248, first reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 248, Unlawful Protesting at a Funeral Amendments, an act relating to crimes and offenses, sponsored by Representative Byrd. Passed the House on third reading, ayes 55, noes 4, excused 1.
House Bill 248 has been assigned to Committee Number 8, Transportation. House Bill 260, first reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 260, Industrial Siting Financial Resources, and Act Relating to Industrial Siting, sponsored by Representative Stubson. Passed the House on third reading, ayes 52, noes 7, excused 1.
House Bill 260 has been assigned Committee Number 9, Minerals. House Bill 184, first reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 184, Minimum Wage Statutes Repeal, an act relating to labor and employment, sponsored by Representative Gingery. Passed the House on third reading, ayes 57, noes 2, excused 1.
House Bill 184 has been assigned to Committee Number 10, Labor Health. Senator Coe.
Hey, Mr. President.
Go ahead,
I would respectfully request that we re-refer the following bills from Committee Number 4 to Committee Number 9, Minerals. House Bill 144, School District Bonds. House Bill 204, Patriotism in the Classroom. House Bill 227, Education Constitution Instruction. And House Bill 93, School Unification Student Count Deletion.
Request is that House Bill 144, House Bill 204, House Bill 227, and House Bill 93 be re-referred from Committee 4 to Committee 9, Minerals. Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Reports from standing committees.
February the 9th, 2011, Mr. President, your committee number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, to whom was referred House Bill 217, engrossed, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Bebout, Coe, Cooper, Jennings, and Rothfuss, Senator Bebout, Chairman. February the 9th, 2011, Mr. President, your committee number 4, Education, to whom was referred House Bill 72, engrossed, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Coe, Jennings, Landon, and Rothfuss. No, Senator Barnard. Senator Coe, Chairman. February the 9th, 2011, Mr. President, your committee number 1, Judiciary, to whom was referred House Bill 95, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senator Burns, Christensen, Escobel, Hicks, and Perkins. Senator Perkins, Chairman.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader, we are at that order of business for consideration of bills on general file. Before we do that, Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, House Bill 217 has an appropriation on it. I would ask to be re-referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations.
Request is that House Bill 217 be re-referred to Appropriations. Hearing no objections, that is so ordered. Now, Senator Ross, or Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Mr. President, I move that the Senate resolve itself back into Committee of the Whole.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion is carried. Senator Johnson, you can return to the chair if you would, please.
Good. Thanks. We will resume on House Bill 117, and there is a Committee of the Whole amendment, and I would ask. Oh, certainly. Senator Schiffer.
Mr. Chairman, earlier today, I misspoke, I think, when I talked about the tax exemption for electrical usage. I was taking those figures off of page 5 of the report from the Wyoming Business Council. I have since been informed that that tax break goes to the UPSs and not to the electrical charge that's on your bill. So I apologize if I misread what's printed in front of me, but it's still printed in front of me.
Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess I'd like to respond. We were getting a great debate before lunch, before the majority floor leader decided to throw some cold water on us. And if we were having a lot of fun, we ought to tee it up here a little bit more. But, you know, when we talk about whether these facilities are going to be packed up in the middle of the night and driven off to some other land, when you begin to look at a minimum facility commitment of $50 million, folks, you're not going to, after parking $50 million into real estate improvements, going to pick up your investment and go home. It is true that a lot of the computer equipment inside of the facility is maybe more mobile, but you still have to have a building on the order of nearly $1 billion to handle, or not a $1 billion building, but hundreds of millions of dollars of buildings to house it. Unlikely they're going to move it. The other thing that happens is we have all the physical infrastructure by that. By that time, we've got the fiber, the buildings there, the workforce will be there. I submit to you they're not going to just run away. Now, over on page 3, lines 17 through 20, we specify that the facility, but for the equipment on lines 18 through 20, the equipment purchase has to be maintained and operated until the qualifying equipment is scheduled for replacement or until it's reached the end of its serviceable life. And the purpose of that, in part, is to make sure that these equipment stay here, that the jobs stay here. The electricity issue, there was, when you read some of these documents, there was a time where it was being proposed that there would be an exemption on electricity. That's been withdrawn. That's no longer in the bill. And it is true, as my colleague from KC points out, that the qualifying uninterruptible power supplies, those are your large battery packs comparable to the UPS units on your computers that make sure that there's non-stoppable power, I guess, or uninterruptible power. With respect to this particular entity that's looking at Laramie as a site, it is a U.S. corporation. Its home offices are in New York, and it may be that their shareholders are overseas, but in the end, somebody's got to do these facilities. Somebody needs to put in a great deal of capital investment. And the investment's not going to come here unless we provide the types of incentives that are going to recruit them here in light of the fact that they're being recruited elsewhere throughout the country. And when we talked about some of the hurdles, I don't think the hurdles so much as our tax base or structure, because I agree. You would think that companies would flock here simply because there is no corporate income tax. There is no we don't have any type of income tax. But there are other hurdles, and I would say that, and I think you know what the hurdles are. They are just, there's just not a huge job base. We know that we're going to have to work with them to develop the employment base. We don't have that critical mass where companies come in here and they're not going to have to incur some expenses here that they would not otherwise incur. And part of the recruiting effort is a recognition that we have to make some, we're trying to keep our children here, but we also have to make some reach out and make it easy for these companies to want to come here.
Senator Rossus.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I wanted to clarify a couple of points from earlier debate, particularly some of the points raised by my colleague from Fremont County, who seems to have left and may not then hear the answers to his questions, but so be it. One of his concerns was the fact that the data presented as far as the economic assessment has a multiplier inherent to it of a 4x multiplier for the economic factor. And he said, based on some analysis, that in fact a 2x multiplier might even be the high number, which is a good point, and there's very valid concerns there. But if you look at page 1 of the summary of mega data center legislation, there's only one component of the $160 million over 10 years that multiplier affects. And that's a sum of nearly $11 million. So if we take for granted the argument made by my colleague from Fremont County, that'll be a difference of about $5 million. So while it's a valid point, it's not a point that's necessarily going to mean that this is no longer an economically viable project that we want to get to. It's simply a $5 million difference in the bottom line if you accept the position that's raised by my colleague from Fremont County. The next point he discussed was, if our tax structure is so wonderful, shouldn't that be enough in and of itself, Mr. Chairman, to draw them here? Well, what we may not have addressed clearly enough on page 3 of the data center incentive program comparison, which was given to us by the Wyoming Business Council, this is an analysis basically of how much money it is going to cost this corporation for this given project to go to that state in taxes, a comparison of five of the leading states. And what you can see in this is that Wyoming, based on this legislation, at the top right corner where it says total revenue to state, our total revenue will be $160 million. That's the cost to the corporation. So when you look down the list, you can see that other states aren't necessarily competitive based on their legislation and based on their landscape, with the possible exception of the last state on that list, a state to the east of us. What we needed to do with this legislation is get ourselves to the same position, the same relative standing, as the leader, as we currently see it from an economic standpoint, so that the rest of the incentives that we have in place, the fact that we have better weather, the fact that we have low humidity, the fact that we have easy access to power, when all of those come into play after it's leveled, we should look good. But the key here is, if you take it away to the point where now we're up to $400 million on that list, in other words, if we don't have this exemption, our position on that list is $400 million, we don't look so great anymore. It's not going to draw anyone here. The greatest power, the greatest tax base, everything else that we can raise is not going to make a $240 million difference. So we have to have this legislation in place to be persuasive. And the final point I wanted to address was this concept of electricity rates and excess electricity and how that's going to be calculated and potentially passed on to the consumer. This is a valid point, but this is not the piece of legislation to address that point. I share that concern. We probably need to look into that into the future, because we need to make sure that as this goes forward, that electricity is developed in a way that is consistent with low rates, low electrical rates for the consumer. So it's a valid point that I think needs to have some legislative consideration. But it should not be a point of consideration for this piece of legislation. We can look to that in the future. We'll have plenty of time to make sure that those rate hikes, if there are any, are not passed on because of this project. And I certainly appreciate the fact that that was raised. And the final point, Mr. Chairman, that I wanted to make was, this is effectively a negotiation, and you need to think of it as a negotiation. We can tack on all sorts of provisions through amendment, through additional legislation, through other little gotcha points, through things that say, well, if you don't do this, then we get more money, or if we don't do that, then we get more money. But the reality is, the more of those we tack on, and the less favorable our position looks to a company that is looking at Wyoming as one of their options for a mega data center, the less likely it is for us to get that mega data center. So let's not hang on all the ornaments onto this piece of legislation and come up with lots of additional restrictions. Let's put together a good deal, enter a good faith negotiation, and try and draw a few hundred million dollars to the state of Wyoming and increase our economic diversification. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Case.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm pretty curious about the states on this list. Have you ever been in any of these states in the summer? They are so hot and sticky and hot. So, wow, thanks for the good data. Oh, and their electricity prices are all higher, too, guaranteed, probably 50% higher.
Senator Bibas.
Chairman, just a question, and you could certainly answer this tomorrow. When I look on page 2 about the definition of data processing in Wyoming Statute 3915-101A-45, I can't find that in the statute, so maybe someone could help me out and tell me what that definition is, because if you look on down to under the exemption side of it, we're talking about computers, servers, monitors. I want to be sure that that definition tracks with what we're trying to do here, and it only refers to data processing centers and those computers, not other computers.
Further discussion. We do have an amendment on the bill. Senator Schiffer.
Mr. Chairman, could I have that amendment read in, please?
The reading clerk will please read the amendment.
House Bill 117, Committee of the Whole, Amendment Number 1 to engross copy, page 1, line 6.
Mr. Chairman, I'll move Committee of the Whole, Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 117. Mr. Chairman, we've had numerous discussions this session about accountability and all those kind of things, and I was glad my colleague from Albany County mentioned hanging things on trees. What I'm trying to do is put some green leaves on this tree, green being the color of money. Mr. Chairman, what this does, this says, you bet, this may be a very good idea, but the same old thing, trust but verify. And what this asks is that if we grant this tax exemption to this foreign company, that at the end of 5 years, they have to show that they've met the criteria that we're using to judge this. If they can't meet it, then it goes away. They haven't kept their end of the bargain. They haven't put the green on the tree. It's very simple, but it just says we'll hold you accountable to it. You get the tax exemption. Come on in, back your big truck in, and dump out your computer trays. That's a good thing. But you got to stand and deliver. That's all it asks. And stand and deliver what you promised to do. I think it's a reasonable request. I'm not asking them to pay back, which other states do, by the way. It's customary. Other states give a tax exemption. Part of the deal is if you don't deliver, you pay it back. We don't do that. We'll take people at their word. I envision this a little bit like buying a truckload of cattle, and I pay for them, but I always count those cows off the truck. I want to see how many I actually get. I don't know of any business that takes an order and doesn't take at least a tally of what comes off the truck and into their door. On behalf of the state, I'm asking for exactly that same thing. I think this is reasonable. I'm almost very confident that these folks can deliver what they say they're going to deliver. But I just want to verify. I'd be happy to answer any questions, and I'd ask for your favorable consideration of this amendment.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I've got a few technical questions about the amendment. Now, typically, a sunset amendment says thus and such are repealed 5 years after the effective date or on a date certain. This one says 5 years after the date which the data processing service center commences operation. First question, Mr. Chairman. This is a general law. It's not specific to any particular data center. It has to be a general law. What happens if there are two of them? Which is the data center? So I have a problem with the wording on the amendment on that score. Second, the amendment says, repeal the exemptions provided in this section shall not be effective if the governor and the Joint Interim Revenue Committee certify. Mr. Chairman, normally a sunset date is a sunset date, and if we want it not to be effective, the whole legislature passes a bill through the normal process, signed by the governor, that eliminates or changes that effective date. Here we're delegating that function to the governor and a joint committee. And my question here is that a constitutional delegation of our power, or does that provision get us in trouble? Mr. Chairman, I see the point in having a sunset date so that we take a look at this sort of thing to make sure it's working the way we planned it and we aren't having unintended consequences. But I wonder about the specific mechanics of this section. Maybe somebody can enlighten me.
Senator Schiffer.
Mr. Chairman, and I'll take the questions in order. I appreciate them. They're very good questions and very difficult to answer. In terms of the data center, doesn't matter how many, if there's one or two, they're going to have to say we've delivered what we said we would deliver. I don't know whether there may be a bunch of these. I hear my colleague from Albany County has promised me they won't be located in southern Johnson County. Other than that, they could cover the state. I think that would be a great thing if we could get a bunch of them. In terms of certify, the reason that's in there, one of the things that companies want when they come into a state is certainty on the tax structure. If you put an exemption in, it is the straight traditional, tax goes away. That's a damper on recruitment. I don't want to be a damper on recruitment. All I'm saying is we'll give you this tax exemption, and it'll go on forever unless you don't hold up your end of the bargain. So they have certainty. The company has certainty that they will always get this exemption, as long as the legislature doesn't repeal it. They'll get it forever. They have certainty on the tax structure that they're facing, unless they don't deliver their end. Totally within their control. That's why it's worded the way it is. It's to provide that certainty on behalf of this foreign corporation.
Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And folks, on and against the amendment, I knew there was a problem when we started issuing people computers so they could type during lunch. I sit over there, I see this big grin and the fingers going, I know something's coming. ladies and gentlemen, when you take a look at the amendment, our colleague from Natrona County is exactly right. There are a couple mechanical problems from the amendment, even if you wanted to have a sunset. But take a look at the last sentence where it says there's going to be a certification that the benefits projected in the Wyoming Business Council analysis dated February 9th, 2010 are accurate. Well, we know now that we're talking about one facility, and it is the facility that, incidentally, is a U.S. company with offices in traded on the stock market. We don't know who their shareholders are if we don't look at it, but or if we don't find their list. But having said that, if what we're going to do here is say, look, you have to be of the warranty, we're going to require that you warrant information that the state agency, the business council that we put together, they're the ones responsible for generating this information. They've got a computer program over there that has inputs and outputs, and my colleague from Fremont County may be exactly right. Maybe those are very ambitious returns on the dollars, and you can get a variety of reports that say that every dollar circulates one time, three times, four times. But to require that the company that we're recruiting and that they have to verify and then document that they met the expectations that projected by our state agency, that wouldn't be appropriate to do. That's something that's our agency. They are out there trying to recruit businesses along with us, and they're trying to be advocates for the projects. We are all advocates here. And if we overstate the benefits, certainly the entity that we're trying to recruit isn't responsible for our overstatements or our understatements. But we have experience in the world, and we know that these companies, when they bring this level of employment and this level of investment, will in fact bring a huge economic boost. You know, if they provide the capital construction they're providing, the assessed valuation in Albany County would go up $174 million. That's a 49% increase in our assessed valuation, a huge boost. That's pretty significant, and that goes to the diversification. So if you want to start lighting up the Christmas tree and putting more ornaments on it, then at some point you haven't created an incentive for anybody to come. And if you're a corporate officer in New York trying to determine whether or not you're going to locate your facility here And one of the reasons you want to locate the facility here is because there's a tax treatment that you think is favorable for your company. And you look at Section 2 and you say, what does it mean? I don't know what it means. All I know is that if they don't dot their I's, cross their T's, they'll lose that entire benefit. So I'd urge you to reject this. This is no way to recruit businesses.
Question having been called, all those in favor of Senator Schiffer's motion to adopt Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 117, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
The amendment has failed. Back on the bill. Question on the bill. All those in favor of Senator Hines' motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, that it do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 117, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill 117 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 68.
House Bill 68, Violent Felony Definition Expansion, and Act Relating to Crimes and Offenses, sponsored by Representative Buchanan.
Buchanan.
I'm trying.
Yeah.
February the 2nd. Mr. President, it was assigned to Committee Number 1 Judiciary. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Burns, Christensen, Escobel, Hickson, Perkins, Senator Perkins, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Senator Perkins.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rise and report, they do so with a due pass recommendation, or due pass House Bill 68, Violent Felony Definition Expansion. And if you'll bear with me, with your leave, I'll explain the bill. Unless Senators, okay, so I'll go ahead and explain the bill. What you have here is in our statutes, we have a number of places where we talk about violent felony definition expansions. And for an example, we had a bill that came through earlier that referenced an expungement that referenced violent felonies. And so this dealing with a violent felony, which is a defined term in our statutes. And so what this bill does is it modifies the violent felony definition expansions. And so if you look at the bill, when you look down here in 61104, violent felony, we're adding the words at the bottom of page 1, aggravated assault and battery. And if you go to the back, we're adding a few additional statutes to this. And 63111 is, where did my notes go? I hate it when I'm so organized. 63111 is, that helps, thanks. Oh, man. 63111 is the possession, manufacture, transportation, sale of explosives. Improvised explosive device for incendiary apparatus with unlawful intent. And so that's what 63111. 65204 adds, 65204 adds assault on a peace officer, and specifically 65204 has to do with it's assault on a police officer, in particular, I believe, disarming the police officer, and the and then 62508 is the use of I believe taking deadly weapons into jails, penal institutions, or mental hospitals. All those are typically felonies that are punishable by typically 10 years in prison, a maximum of 10 years in prison. And so that's what the bill does. It adds those to the violent felonies, Mr. Chairman. So with that, I'll stand for questions.
Are there questions? Further discussion? Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Could we have a little more discussion about what exactly battery is? Can you merely just touch someone in some manner or another? Can we have a better understanding just exactly what that crime is?
Second, and it's not just battery, Mr. Chairman. I'm sorry, I didn't wait for you to call me.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's not just battery, it's aggravated assault and battery. And so once you have an aggravated assault and battery, there's a number of ways to do it. But typically it's either one that you've either assaulted someone you've assaulted somebody with intent to either cause serious bodily harm or attempted to cause serious bodily harm. And if you remember, as we talked about serious bodily harm is typically life-threatening, and it's typically, if you have an opportunity for a full recovery, it very, very, very well likely may not be serious bodily harm. It also is threatening someone or threatening someone with a deadly weapon, such as a firearm, a knife, potentially a club, those types of things. So this is not just battery. This is aggravated assault and battery, which is punishable on a first offense by 10 years in prison as a felony.
Senator Barnard.
Mr. Chairman, I also had a question for the good senator from Natrona County. When I saw robbery there, I would hope that robbery with a gun or with a knife or something like you said would be included, but I wonder if a purse snatching or some kind of a lower degree, is there any differentiation in the robbery term?
Senator Perkins.
The robbery term is existing language, and so the robbery is that. That's what the language is now. Where this bill does not change or add that language. That's the existing statutory language. But I suppose if you give me a minute, I'll look at the robbery statute and tell you.
Senator Bernard.
Something like that.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, could we have a little more explanation as to how this definition of violent felonies is used? Is this one of those bills where if we want to put a stop to our willy-nilly expansion of felonies, this would be a good bill to start with?
It sounds like a pregnant idea to me, so.
Further discussion. Senator Rothfuss?
No, sorry.
Just leaving, huh? Senator Perkins, you do have an amendment.
Thank you.
You want me to have it read in at this time?
Yes, sir.
The reading clerk will please read the amendment.
House Bill 68, Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to engross copy, page 2, line 3.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, I'd move Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 68 and ask for the body's favorable consideration. With your indulgence, I'll go ahead and explain what we're doing here. What I did is, as I looked at this in committee, and rather than do it in committee, I thought, well, I'll just do this as we come to Committee of the Whole and we can talk about it. But as I looked at that, I didn't find it a particularly expansive list of what we consider to be violent felonies, or at least what I would consider to be violent felonies. And so what this amendment does is it adds in the two places in the statute where we define the term violent felony, it adds the following, in addition to the ones that the bill itself would add, it adds the following. It adds sexual assault in the first degree, particularly Romanet 1 and Romanet 2, which is any actor who inflicts sexual intrusion on a victim commits sexual assault in the first degree if the actor causes submission of the victim through the actual application, reasonably calculated cause submission of the victim, a physical force or forcible confinement, or they do it by threat of death, serious bodily injury, extreme physical pain, or kidnapping. So it adds that. It also adds in 62303, sexual assault in the second degree, any actor who inflicts sexual intrusion on a victim commits sexual assault in the second degree if under the circumstances not constituting sexual assault in the first degree. And it goes to two of those. There's eight of those, but it only includes two of them. The two that are included are the actor causes submission of the victim by threatening to retaliate in the future against the victim or the victim's spouse, parents, or basically other family members. And to retaliate includes threats of kidnapping, death, serious bodily injury, or extreme physical pain. And also, include in that if the actor is an employee, independent contractor, volunteer of the state, city, or county, or town in a privately operated adult or juvenile correctional system. So ultimately what you have is a person of authority who's a jailer or a guard would sexually assault an inmate or a resident of those facilities. It would also include assault and battery on a corrections or detention officer, which is 62508. In particular, it's not just any assault, but particularly the aggravated assault and battery on a corrections officer or detention officer if he intentionally or knowingly propels any dangerous substance at the correction officer, detention officer, or staff member while the corrections officer, detention officer, or staff member is acting in the course of his official duty or as a result of the correction officer's or detention officer's official duties. He also violates this section if the person has contagious, life-threatening disease and commits the violation with the intent to infect a corrections officer, detention officer, or staff member with the contagious or life-threatening disease. It also adds 611, which keeps the 6311 in there. It keeps the three that we did in there, which is possession, manufacture, and transportation, sale of explosives and improvised explosive devices or incendiary apparatus. It also includes 65204, which is interference with a peace officer. That's disarming a peace officer, particularly in its one who know, and the two subsections that apply are B, a person intentionally and knowingly causes or attempts to cause bodily injury to a peace officer engaged in the lawful performance of his official duties, and also a person intentionally and knowingly disarms a peace officer of his firearm while that officer is engaged in the lawful performance of his duties. 65207 is escape by violence or assault while armed. And 65209 is taking deadly weapons into jails, penal institutions, or mental hospitals. And the last one, is 68101, which is the use of a firearm while committing a felony. A person uses a firearm while committing a felony. It also adds those. So it adds those to the list of violent felonies. And so that's what the bill does. It adds those. As I went through those and thought about those, visited with some prosecutors, some others, what they thought should be included in this list, those were the ones that we came up with. And with that, I'll stand for questions and ask for your favorable vote.
Questions on the amendment? Question having been called. All those in favor of Senator Perkins' motion to adopt the Committee of the Whole Amendment number 1 to Senate File 68, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Standing Committee of the Whole Amendment number 1 to House Bill 68 is passed. We are back on the bill. Further discussion? Question having been called. All those in favor of Senator Perkins' motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 68, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
House Bill 68 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 113.
House Bill 113, Wyoming Pipeline Authority, and Act Relating to the Wyoming Pipeline Authority, sponsored by the Minerals Committee. It was referred to Committee Number 9, Minerals Business Economic Development, which reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Bebout, Cole, Cooper, Jennings, and Rothfuss. Senator Bebout, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Cooper?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises and reports that do so with a recommendation that Senate File 113 do pass. Mr. Chairman, there is a Committee of the Whole amendment that we'll hold off on, but I'd like to now yield the floor to Senator Jennings for explanation of the bill.
Senator Jennings.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is a tough one. Just go directly to page 2, line 3. And what we're doing is with the Wyoming Pipeline Authority, we're adding that before any appropriation is made to the authority shall submit its budget for review as provided by Wyoming Statute 9210 through 9210.14. The budget shall request funding only for the purposes contained in this section, provided, however, that the funds appropriated under this subsection shall not be used for the construction or operation of a work of public improvement. Wyoming Statute 9210 through 9210.14 are the duties of the budget divisions. We're just to tell them they got a budget for their money from now on. Mr. Chairman, could we have the amendment read in, please?
Reading clerk will please read the amendment.
House Bill 113, Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1, page 2, line 9.
Senator Jennings.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I move Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 113. Mr. Chairman, what this consists of, you have a piece of paper on your desk that looks like this. It's a bunch of lawyer talk about how we should have used on line 9, where it says public improvement, we should have used internal improvement, and ask your favorable consideration of that little bit of housekeeping amendment.
Further discussion on the amendment? Question having been called, all in favor of Senator Jennings' motion to pass a committee of the standing committee amendment, Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 has passed the committee, and we are back on the bill. Senator Schiffer.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Could we and as I read this, we're moving in a little bit different direction with the Pipeline Authority. Heretofore, they haven't come and requested a budget, to my knowledge. The idea behind it was they were going to be self-sufficient and finance themselves through the proceeds off of bonds, as I recall. And can we have a little more explanation of why do they need an appropriation? What's it for? Why didn't the original plan work?
Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I wanted to add to that, but before we go to that, may I have the privilege of the floor?
You certainly may, Senator
Thank you.
Nicholas.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's not very often that you get your children who are out of state to come show up. I get the tax break for all the dollars I paid to send him to college. Yeah. First, my son Joe. Joe's, stand up. Joe's graduated from the University of Wyoming as a chemical engineer, went on to obtain his PhD from Colorado School of Mines. He's now an operations engineer for Merit Energy Company. He's just got reassigned to a field in southwest Wyoming, and here for work tomorrow. He's got to go see the BLM to wrestle with BLM issues. And then the next gentleman's my son-in-law, Shea Westbrook. Shea's graduated from UW Law School. He's a natural gas and oil and gas policy advisor with Gene George and Associates in Casper. And while he lives in Omaha, he does most of his work now over the Internet. And last but not least is Representative or Senator Ross says everybody's got somebody that's the apple of their eye, and this is my daughter, Kim. Kim is almost always choke up when I talk about my daughter. Kim is actually the beneficiary of the WAMI program. She graduated as a chemical engineer, went to medical school through the WAMI program, and she's now Dr. Nicholas, and she's in her residency in obstetrics and gynecology, first year resident at Creighton University in Omaha. If you welcome my children.
You're very welcome, and those of us in who were in the House and are in the Senate now, we've watched you grow up. Senator Nicholas, are you still on?
Oh, yes, I am.
Oh, good.
What was I talking about? Oh, we're talking about this bill. To follow up on our colleague from Johnson County, as I understood the process was in the beginning, we created the Pipeline Authority as a quasi-governmental entity. And the idea was it would have bonding authority, go out and issue bonds and have all of the benefits of being this quasi-governmental entity. And as a consequence, we funded them through a series of loans. And the loans went year after year after year. And last year, as we were finishing up the budget, since this had begun the process, this process had begun with the last governor, we essentially tried to decide, do you absolve these loans? What do you do? And the discussion was, well, are they going to be self-sufficient? Are they ever going to repay those loans? And if they can't repay the loans, maybe we treat them like an agency like all other agencies and put them through the standard budget process with a budget, line items, and their appropriate and have a standard appropriation. It looks like you're doing a hybrid here, and that is you still want them to have this special status as a quasi-governmental entity, and so they're not borrowing money from us any longer, but they go through the budget process, and I'm not sure you can have it both ways. I mean, you're either a governmental entity and you're getting an annual appropriation by line item, or you're a quasi-governmental entity, in which case, how do you fund it? I mean, some of the other entities that folks may be you know about is the WCDA is a quasi-governmental entity that's out there, runs its own budget, pays itself. But we have the Business Council, it's sort of a hybrid there. It's a little bit different. But I don't think we have any entities that we call quasi-governmental entities, but we're going to treat you like that. You can go out and issue bonds and put, then you get an appropriation. Well, the problem is if you start doing this, then these entities can't be out issuing bonds. They're governmental entities. I mean, you don't want the Ag Department going out and getting bonds to help pay for the Livestock Board and things like that. So here we have, we'll treat you like a governmental entity, and at the same time, you're not. So I think I would like to have a little more discussion on what where the committee came out on those issues and where are these entities landing.
Senator Jennings.
I don't know. But I'll go find out.
Further discussion. Senator Cooper.
Well, Mr. Chairman, absolutely difficult legal questions here for us laymen. But one of the things that I will tell you is, though, that was discussed in the committee at length was the constitutional issue. As exactly was stated by the good senator from Albany County, is that, you can't have it, it's hard to have it both ways here. But the committee really was trying to give the ability to these authorities, both the Pipeline Authority and the Infrastructure Authority, to be able to put together these bond packages, so to speak, but do it in a way that they weren't going to use the good faith and credit of the state, for example, as part of this bond, and also to be able to do it so they weren't looking like they were doing works of internal improvement. I got to make sure I get that straight because it was mixed up and put as public improvement in there. And because there's a problem, because our Constitution, Article 16, Section 6, of course, prohibits that. And so we wanted to be able to give them authority to be able to do these administrative things and to be able to give them, but also give them a little bit of, as it was put by the good senator from Albany County, this kind of this hybrid thing, so they could actually use some of their administrative ability to put together these packages for these bonds, but not actually use it to do the bonding so that we weren't constitutionally in trouble. I don't know if I've gone there. I'm not a lawyer, so I have to rely on it.
Senator Nicholas.
Well, Mr. Chairman, obviously you can't just kill a bill for an entity that exists. Having said that, the budget last year assigned to the standing committee the obligation to resolve the issue. And the issue is, you know, if you walk like a duck, talk like a duck, and you are a duck. If you're going to have an appropriation, fair enough. But we'll take a look at the salary of your CEO. These CEOs of both of these entities, I think, are paid salaries much greater than any other state official, on the order of another $100,000 more than anybody that we pay anywhere else. And if they want to have a state appropriation, have state benefits, and be on our plan, then we'll treat them like a state agency. But if you're a state agency, you can't be out borrowing money. You can't be operating on an entity. Now, the original dream was that these folks would go out and borrow money. And they would issue bonds, and what you do is you go out and you issue tax-free revenue bonds, and you get the tax-free status because you're a quasi-governmental entity. As you're well, you take, for example, the WCDA. They go out and they issue tax-free revenue bonds, generating revenue, and then they loan it to other people's at a 1% increment above because the tax-free market is a lower interest rate. And then they operate with that margin. Well, in this instance, the only bond that I'm aware of that's ever been issued by any of these, either the entities, this one or the next one, is a single bond where they went to the state treasurer, had them loan permanent mineral trust fund dollars at a rate of about 6%. Actually, I think it was a lower, about 5%. Turned around and loaned it to an industry person for 6%, and then they say, we have a success because we have a 1% margin that we can now operate on it. Well, that's insane. The state treasurer should have loaned the money out at 66%. So that's 1% of interest that we lost to the permanent mineral trust fund that goes into our general fund. And, in fact, we lost more than that because most of our investments are at 7%. So we actually lost 2% differential points on a loan that this entity made. And that is not operating their own business. So as you begin to look at what is it that's their mission, it is a serious question with respect to how are we going to go forward. If they're in the business, incidentally, what happened, as I understand it, the federal law never changed. There was never any opportunity for them to issue tax-free revenue bonds for natural gas pipelines, for these large works of internal improvement or whatever you're going to call them. So they never got in there, and I think the prospects are is they will never find this revenue source. So if they're never going to find it, then let's call them a state agency. Let's bring them in. And I don't think there's any hope out there or any federal law that's going to change to allow these folks to go issue tax-free revenue bonds. And if they're a state agency, we ought to treat them like a state agency. We go forward, and they ought to have a regular budget And I'm not even sensing here that we have regional budgets. Are you wanting us to look at their salaries like we do other state agencies and ring them through the process? And I guess those are the questions that I still have.
Senator Schiffer.
Mr. Chairman, this is a really complex thing, because when we authorized the Pipeline Authority, we gave them some unique authorities, one of which is the right of condemnation for useful purposes, not necessity, useful purposes. We also made them, if there's any lawsuits involved in any of their transactions, you do not have a lawsuit against the state. You have it against only the Pipeline Authority. That's the independence we created. Now we're saying, well, we're going to make them a state agency, but we haven't gone back in and said, if you're a state agency, you got to act like a state agency. You can't just go in and condemn property because it's useful. You got to have it's got to be a necessity. And there's a whole list of these advantages or rights, if you will, that we granted the Pipeline Authority. And I don't know whether they continue, whether they don't continue as a state agency. It is not normal. Or any other agency doesn't have those kind of provisions. So at some point we got to decide. Either they can make it as the independent agency, or we got to make them a state agency. But if we do, then we got to go back into the statute and say, here is your authority as a state agency. And maybe we want to keep those going, although it would be unique, absolutely unique. They actually, it's not just the salary. It is the authority we've granted them. It is the immunity we've granted them as a entity of the state, which we did on purpose, quite a discussion. But if they don't need that stuff, then probably we ought to make it look like it's supposed to look.
Senator Nicholas.
Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to just go over a little bit. I know the chairman of the Minerals Committee was off the floor, but we're still back to the issue here, and that is, where are we going forward? The budget obviously assigned the task to the committee to take a look at the structure of this entity, and it appears to me that what's happening is the committee is wanting to endow this entity with all the non-governmental features that you would get if you were like the CDA, but then call them a state agency for budgetary purposes. And it seems to me you can't do it. If it walks like a duck, talks like a duck, it is a duck. And if you're wanting to go through the budget process, then are we going to be taking a look at the salaries for these folks? Are they going to be state agencies? Are they going to be on our salary schedules? Other state agencies, are we going to be looking at all those features? And if the notion is we're not going to do it, and they ought to be a quasi-governmental entity, obviously that was how we funded them through loans. But I'm not certain what the rationale is, how you can come about to say, well, for budgetary purposes, we'll treat you as an agency and fund you like an agency, but for all other purposes, we want you to be a quasi-governmental entity, go out and issue tax-free revenue bonds, the right of condemnation that would not exist with you just got a lot of things that are going forward.
Senator Cooper.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, answer maybe a few of the questions that have been brought up here. First of all, the funding, the legislature has actually already funded these agencies in the 2011 and 12 budget period, and we approved funding from the general fund for these agencies. We also forgave last year the loans that we had given them, except for a $250,000 loan, which they actually paid off. But all the other loans were forgiven by the legislature in the 2010 session. And so we've already done that. And if you look on another thing that was brought up was about the budgeting thing. If you look in the amendment on the bill under 36, just under that one the section there where the new amendment is, you'll see that it says 9-2, Wyoming Statute 9-2-110 through 9-2-1014, and that is the budgeting process. So that's what this bill is asking for, to have these people actually come in and provide a budget and go through the entire budgeting process like any other division of the state or department of the state would have to do.
Senator Bebout.
And thank you, Mr. Chairman. I apologize to the members of the Senate for not being here. This whole purpose of this bill is to respond to a Title 300 series or 300 section in the budget bill a couple of years ago, where you directed us to try to come up with a mechanism on how to deal with it. And it said if we didn't come up with a mechanism, well, I recall that Section 300 series, that they would not be funded. So the attempt of this is to do it in a manner that will satisfy what we're trying to do here, yet satisfy the direction of the Joint Appropriations Committee in that Section 300 series. And I don't have that language in front of me, but it was pretty pointed. We had a lot of discussion about that. And it really said if we don't have a plan, then we jeopardize the funding of it. First thing is it should be a quasi-government agency. I mean, that's the way it's set up. That's the way it's always been set up. And I think that's the way it works, both this one and the Pipeline Authority. And it works in the mechanism set up to be able to go to the private sector and do what they do. The other thing that we talked about is in terms of their funding for their budgets, if there are no bonds and no revenues, then in essence, every time what we do is we continue to borrow money and to fund it because there's no revenues from any bond stream because there are no bonds that have been issued, and we have to go through that process of forgiving the notes. So it was a mechanism set up to try to come to the Appropriations Committee and ask for their budget as a quasi-government agency that you should see the money. And we wanted to be sure that it was only for the administrative side because of the constitutional issues. We couldn't ask for you to do any money or appropriate any money for construction or operation. We didn't want to get into that because I think we were going too far. All we wanted was their operating budget. It would go to the Appropriations Committee. You would review it. If you don't like it, you do what you do. And they were presented to you as a quasi-government agency, and by doing that, we've complied with your wishes. That's what I thought we were doing. And if we're not, then we'll sure have some more discussion, and I wish I had that Section 300. I'll have that for you tomorrow if these bills move forward and we can get into it further, but that's the purpose of this bill.
Senator Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, I recall when these things were set up, at least the Infrastructure Authority, and it was kind of modeled after the Pipeline Authority, is that the reason for the loans was to make sure there was that clear distinction so we at least had some level of comfort that these entities could do works of internal improvement. And now we're moving that line a little bit because we're taking part of that and using these funds, that general funds, to fund in part the operations of these entities. And I think at some point in time, Mr. Chairman, that if that line becomes more blurred and we no longer have the comfort that these are quasi-governmental entities and they shouldn't have the powers vested to them, we may have to put an initiative on the ballot to look at change to the Constitution to say that, yes, we've been walking like a duck and talking like a duck and fudging the Constitution for quite a while, that we may at some point in time have to put it to the people and say this is something that they really want us to do, is works of internal improvement in these limited areas. Other states have made that decision. I know North Dakota has, some other ones. But if we keep moving this line, our comfort level, I think, is going to continue to go down as to whether or not we have that firewall that we hope to have and keep established as far as whether or not we are in line with the Constitution or we're not in line with the intent of the Constitution.
Senator Nicholas.
Mr. Chairman, I think that actually states my concern very well, and that is this. We're all bound by the Constitution. We all swore an oath to come here. And our Constitution prohibits what we can do with respect to works of internal improvement. We're allowed to fund governmental agencies. We're not allowed to fund non-governmental agencies. You use the word agency in your description. Over here we use, well, we want to have this as a quasi-government sort of entity to work with the private industry. we're prepared to submit our budgets to you, but we want to have these other powers and opportunities, and one is to incur debt, to go out and issue bonds. And at some point, you're essentially extending the full faith and credit of the state of Wyoming. So I guess at some point, you do reach a point that if the committee has an opinion from the Attorney General that this is lawful, then it's not a violation of the Constitution. But I sense, just from what I believe is prior decisions, the Witzenberg case and these others, that we are now treading across that line. And all I'm looking for right now is a reassurance that, for all of us, that by voting for this, we haven't treaded across the line and we have a constitutional entity.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I think it's important that we keep in front of us an understanding that this is an important outfit for the state of Wyoming, that getting adequate pipeline capacity to ship some of our mineral products, particularly natural gas, but also oil, out of the state is very important to our economy and to our state's revenue. And we don't want to do this entity in over a bureaucratic hassle where we've gotten ourselves over some line. Now, we could decide to do them in if they were ineffective. That's a different decision. But that's not what I'm hearing now. Mr. Chairman, what I want to do is make a suggestion for us to think about. What would happen? The problem is we've got to fund their ongoing operations. When we're dealing with an outfit that is outside the government where we need to do this, we appropriate the money to a regular state agency. We contract with that outfit for some specific services that the state needs. And the services that the state needs here are to promote additional pipelines so we got enough capacity to export our products, not building them. It's the other things this agency is doing. Why can't we do that here? Why wouldn't that be a reasonable compromise and a way out of this box?
Senator Nicholas.
Still the white bill. There's no green bill. And so if you look at page 2, now you're giving this entity, with the governor and the attorney general, the ability to take our legislative stabilization reserve account and loan it out to somebody else? Is that the way I read that? $100 million from the legislative reserve account, that's the account that we've been saving up for over the course of the last 8 years to take care of the ups and downs. The bill doesn't go to Appropriations Committee. It doesn't get an analysis of what's the risk factor. The LSRA, our rainy day account, now is a loan fund, and it can be done by the governor, who can't appropriate money, by the attorney general, who's the executive office. I haven't heard anything about it. Is that still in the bill?
Senator Bevout.
Mr. Chairman, let's get back to what this bill is intended to do. Everything that my colleague from Albany County talks about is existing language. That's been there. And if you want to talk about who put it in there and what we need to do about it, we can sure have that discussion. This is language that deals with the bonds. It's been in the statute since, I think, July 1st of 2006. We're not talking about changing anything that happens. We're not talking about what the Attorney General may do, what the governor may or may not do, other than what's in existing language. All we're trying to do, and you can make a policy decision here if you want to. If you don't want these two authorities to be an independent quasi-agency, then you ought to go through the process and terminate them and put them under the views of government as public employees, state employees. I think that's a mistake. I think we're doing some really good things with these two agencies and what they're doing and how they're helping our state in big issues. My tall colleague from Natrona County talked about maybe there's a better way to do it. I don't know how you do it if you want to have them give them the authority to issue bonds. I don't think we want to delegate to somebody else a contract with another part of state government to issue, in fact, and one of them up to $2 billion in bonds. I don't think I want to do that. I'm not sure that's the way we want to do it. I think what we want to do is have a quasi-government agency, and all we're trying to do, members of the Senate, is to set up a mechanism so they go in front of the Appropriations Committee to deal with their budget. We're not talking about using that budget to do anything other than what you appropriated for, which is to run that agency. We're not talking about violating the Constitution. I'll get some more information for you on that. We've changed this draft three or four times to be sure that we complied with that. And let me bring that to you tomorrow and circulate it around. If we haven't done it, we'll sure change it. But let's don't get involved in an issue where we're trying to do away with a couple of good things that really work. And this one works. Thank you.
Yes. Senator Cooper.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I have a copy of the Attorney General's opinion on this very subject here, and I'd be glad to make this available to the body if we pass this bill on. And I would tell you that this whole amendment that we're looking at here is based on this opinion and how it was described to us. It's a Whitzenberg case, which was described earlier. Whitzenberger case, which was described somewhat earlier by our good senator from Albany County. So I'd be glad to make that available.
Further discussion? Senator Bebop.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I want to read to the body section 331 out of the 2010 budget session. And this is what we felt was the direction that the Joint Appropriations Committee gave us. It says, the Joint Minerals Committee shall review the Wyoming Pipeline Authority created by Wyoming Statute 375108 and determine the appropriate means to transition the authority, if we so desire, from a body corporate operating of the state instrumentality to a state agency. That was what you told us to do. The committee shall develop this legislation, and that's what we're doing. We made the decision that the best way to do this was as a quasi-government agency. And in order to do that and try to be constitutional, this is the mechanism we came up with to fund it. And we'll be glad to share that information with you as to relative to do it. And if we want to have this be a state agency and not be a quasi-agency, then that's certainly a way to do it. I don't know if by defeating this bill would do that. Thank you.
Senator Perkins. Okay, Senator Nicholas.
Mr. Chairman, I don't care whether it's a state agency or a quasi-governmental entity. I just don't think you can be both. Somebody's got to make a decision which way you go.
Senator Perkins.
Mr. Chairman, just going back to the issue about these bonds, when you go to that existing language, just as a point of clarification, if you go and you look on line 19, and as was told, this was talking about existing language. What you're talking about is this is existing language. This was we had some discussion about this in an earlier bill where we talked about expanding the ability for IRDBs earlier in the session, but it's the same type of thing. What you're talking about and this references back to permissible investments. And so this $100,000 that we're talking about is already in the existing language. It's been there for a number of years now. You're talking about these permissible investments under 9-4-715A. That's under the auspices of the State Loan and Investment Board. And when you do this, it has to be with the Attorney General and the Governor's permission. But ultimately, you're talking about these are the permissible investments. 94715A talks about the State Treasurer being the Chief Investment Officer, and they're supposed to go out, and he invests as either directed by the legislature or as he should in to try and obtain the returns that the State Treasurer should retain. That's A.D., is while approving, acquiring, investing, reinvesting, exchanging, retaining, selling, or managing investments for the state, members of the board, the state treasurer, members of the board would include the governor, shall act and exercise judgment and care of a prudent investor as specified under the Uniform Prudent Investor Act. So you have these out here. But these are the same types of decisions that the State Loan and Investment Board is making all the time. They have the ability to invest $100 million in bonds subject to these provisions. They've got to be the investments that are out there. Also, E, subsection E that's referred there to on line 18, talks about individual investment or groups of investments made under this act shall be evaluated solely, shall not be evaluated solely in isolation, but also in the context of the entire investment portfolio. So this $100 million is out there. It's been out there for a long time for them to invest. They're still bound by the prudent investor rules. It doesn't bypass the state treasurer's obligation to make sure these are invested in appropriate investments. And it also said not to be evaluated solely or in isolation. They're supposed to be looked at in the entire evaluation of the state's portfolio of these invested funds. So when we talk about that, I just wanted to point that out, Mr. Chairman, that that's something that's been in effect for a long time. It doesn't alleviate or give the governor any more power than he's had for a number of years now, and is still subject to the approval of the board and the state treasurer in carrying out their fiduciary responsibilities as the state loan and investment board.
Senator Nicholas? Okay, Senator Bebout.
And thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, my colleague from Natrona County, for bringing those points up. If there's a better way to do this to accomplish what we want, and like I said, we worked a long time on this with different attorneys, we sure will look forward to working with the chairman of the Appropriations Committee, because, you know, I think we need to do something, and that's the direction we're trying to follow. And if there's better language, this is the best we could come up with. So I would certainly be willing to work with that on a second reading amendment.
Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I do remember that we were looking for a borrowing technique at a time when the agency was clearly a governmental entity, not with a state agency budget. When we change these things, you do have to take a step back. You got to step back and say, can we continue to do what we did before? Now, I believe the law is that, and I'm not sure we need to look into it, but I believe that in general, that the permanent mineral trust fund, you can borrow and you can reach in and lend money to invest it into corporations, corporate stock. We changed the Constitution to allow that, and that's why we get a higher rate of return. With your non-trust funds, that is your state agency pool, you're generally limited to bonds and guaranteed securities, and that's why that fixed income is lower. And ordinarily, I don't know that you can take money that's in your state agency pool, and that's what the $100 million is in the Legislative Stabilization Reserve account, and lend it to or invest it in corporations, because we're limited to the types of investments that we can do with our agency pool. And ordinarily, generally what the taxpayer, the taxpayers and voters that created our Constitution said, we don't want the state treasurer out loaning our pooled monies in companies and having the companies go broke and then finding out tomorrow we can't pay for the cost of doing business. Now, in the permanent fund, the Constitution, you recall, was changed to allow investments in companies. So we need to now take a step back and say, can we do this? And pragmatically, I guess a first question is there any real probability that the pipeline authority is going to want to lend out $100 million out of the LSRA? And if there's none, then maybe we're arguing over something that's really not a tool they need. If they need that tool, as we're changing them, we've got to take a step back and say, can we do this? That's all I'm saying.
Senator Bebout.
Mr. Chairman, I appreciate those comments. And just a little bit about the bonding authority, and I don't have that statute in front of me, but I think I recall it happened maybe 5 or 6 years ago where we increased that authority up to several billion dollars, and all the Wyoming Pipeline Authority would do would be the vehicle and the mechanism to set up those bonds. The state treasurer may invest in those bonds. And that's what this language says here that we're talking about on 375206B. It says may invest monies, and I think that's talking about they may invest in some of those bonds. So they set up the authority to issue the bonds, and then the treasurer may invest in them. And we don't put our full faith and credit behind those bonds, and we have no The state has no responsibility to ensure those bonds are paid back. They may not buy any of the bonds, but they certainly could buy the bonds. And I don't know if that's answered your question or not, but is there a $100 million investment out there in terms of these bonds? Right now, I will tell you to the chairman of the Appropriations Committee that the Wyoming Pipeline Authority has never issued any bonds. That has not happened that I'm aware of. The Wyoming Infrastructure Authority, and Mr. Chairman, if you'll allow me the latitude to mention that since we're debating this bill, has done that. That bill's up next, and I can explain that.
Further discussion? Further discussion? Question that being called, all those in favor of Senator Cooper's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 113, say aye. Those opposed, no. House Bill 113 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 109. The reading clerk will please read the bill.
House Bill 109, Wyoming Infrastructure Authority, an act relating to Wyoming Infrastructure Authority, sponsored by the Minerals Committee. It was referred to Committee Number 9, Mineral Business Economic Development, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Bebout, Cove, Cooper, Jennings, and Rothfuss, Senator Bebout, Chairman.
Further reading of the bill, what is your pleasure, Senator Bebout?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I move that with the Committee of the Whole rise reported do so with a recommendation that House Bill 109, Wyoming Infrastructure Authority, do pass. There are no standing committee amendments, and I yield to the floor sponsor, Senator Cooper.
Senator Cooper.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just almost hate to get up and broach this bill after the discussion on the last one. But, Mr. Chairman, this is a mere amendment, only it's to the on House Bill 109. It's on the Wyoming Infrastructure Authority. I just will say a little bit about it and just a little thing, I guess, about it. First of all, as was mentioned maybe earlier on the previous bill, the 2010 legislature assigned the Joint Minerals Committee the task of reviewing the structure of the Wyoming Infrastructure Authority and making recommendations regarding possible changes to 2011 legislative session. Well, this is what this is. This is a result, this legislation, of that request of us to work those issues with the structure of the WIA. Mr. Chairman, as a result of the interim review, the committee generated this legislation, and also that the general administrative and related expenses of the WIA will be funded, Wyoming Infrastructure, I should say, funded by the appropriation. And as it's mentioned in the amendment, where it talks about the Wyoming Statute 9210.10 and 9210.14, Mr. Chairman, before I finish discussing a little bit about this amendment to this bill, I would like to have the Committee of the Whole amendment read in, Mr. Chairman.
Reading clerk will please read the amendment.
House Bill 109, Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1, page 2, line 3.
Senator Cooper.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I move Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 109, and just would indicate to you, same as the previous bill, this just was a typo there, changing the word public to internal, as we've been discussing later. Ask for your vote on that amendment.
All those in favor of Senator Cooper's motion to adopt the Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 109, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The amendment is passed. Back on the bill. Senator Bebout.
Mr. Chairman, just to explain a little bit about, you like the way that. That's like trying to get something out of the chairman of the Appropriations Committee, isn't it? Mr. Chairman.
Senator.
Just that Section 332 of the 2010 budget bill has very similar language, almost identical to the on the Pipe Wyoming Infrastructure Authority, and of course it talks about that we declare existing loan balances not collectible, and we agree to discharge and extinguish them. Then we ask the Minerals Committee to come back with language and how to deal with it. That's the purpose of this bill. I don't have that information about the one bond that has been issued. It was for part of the cost to build a coal-fired power plant, as my understanding is. I will have that tomorrow, Mr. Chairman, and the exact amounts of it, the cost and everything, and I will present that to the full body. I would ask your support of this bill as well.
Further discussion? Senator Cooper.
No, Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to mention that a little bit about that one bond that they do have. It was a bond that was for Wyoming Infrastructure Authority financed the first electric transmission project was about a $50 million endeavor, and I think their part of the bond was about $34.5 million with the power company in Wyoming. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And we'll provide that information, as the good chairman said, for the next reading.
Further discussion? Question having been called, all those in favor of Senator Bebout's motion that when the committee of the whole rises to report, that it do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 109, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill 109 is passed to committee of the whole. The last bill for our consideration today, I hope, is House Bill 115. The clerk will please read it.
House Bill 115, Charter Schools Application and Act Relating to Charter Schools, sponsored by Representative Teeters.
You've heard the reading of the bill? Yeah. Whoops. Okay.
It was referred to Committee Number 4, Education. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Barnard, Cole, Jennings, Landon, and Rothfuss. Senator Cole, Chairman.
Now. Thank you. You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Coe?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I move when the committee of the whole rise and report to do so with the do-pass recommendation on House Bill 115. House Bill 115 was brought to us to the co-chair of House Education and myself. We thought it was a relatively easy item to deal with. Didn't choose to have a joint committee bill on this particular item. We have had inconsistencies out there in the application process for charter schools. All this bill does is try to make it uniform. If you look at the language on page 2, it says the state superintendent shall, through rule and regulation, prescribe a uniform charter school application and renewal application form to be used by each district and charter school applicant for purposes of this article. All this really does is say that if we're going to have charter schools out there, let's have a uniform, understood, prescribed application process. That's all this bill does. I'd be more than happy to try to answer questions.
Are there questions? Saw several try to stand up, but now Senator Nutting.
Well, it sounds like I don't need to stand up since everybody has decided, but I just do speak in favor of this bill. I have talked with local leaders of the American Association of Charter Schools, and their opinion is that this does maintain some uniform standards that they support for charter schools, and I support this amendment.
Further discussion? Question having been called, all those in favor of Senator Coe's motion that when the committee of the whole rises to report, that it do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 115, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill 115 has passed the committee of the whole. Mr. Majority, floor leader.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, I move that the committee of the whole rise and report.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The motion is passed.
Mr. President.
The reading clerk will read the committee of the whole report.
Mr. President, your committee of the whole, having had under consideration bills on general file, begs leave to report as follows. House Bill 30, do pass. House Bill 68, do pass amended. House Bill 75, do pass. House Bill 98, do pass. House Bill 117, do pass. House Bill 113, do pass amended. House Bill 109, do pass amended. And House Bill 115, do pass. Senator Johnson, Chairman.
Senator Johnson.
Mr. President, I move for the adoption of the Committee of the Whole report.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion is carried. The report has been adopted. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, I think that clears the desk.
Mr. President, I move that the Senate stand adjourned until 10 a.m. tomorrow morning, February 10th.
Announcements? Senator Geis?
President, your committee number 5, Agriculture, Public Land, and Water Resources, will meet tomorrow night upon adjournment. We're going to take up House Bill 151, Engrossed Hydropower Development, House Bill 230, Engrossed Eminent Domain Wind Energy Collector System 2, House Bill 135, Engrossed State Lands Improvements 2, House Bill 7, Engrossed Wyoming Veterinary Medicine Practice Act 2, House Bill 74, Design Transfer of State Lands, if we have time. House Bill 202, Railroad Fence Repairs, if we have time. And House Bill 223, Property Enclosed Statement, Wind Estate.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your Committee Number 1 Judiciary will meet on Friday, February the 11th at 8 a.m. in Room S1 to consider the following bills. House Bill 159, Uniform Trust Code Amendments. House Bill 157, Abolition of Worthier Title Doctrine, and House Bill 158, Rule Against Perpetuities.
Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, the Appropriations Committee Number 2 will meet tomorrow upon adjournment to consider the following bills. House Bill 40, Engrossed, Compensation for Persons Exonerated Based on DNA. House Bill 129, Engrossed, Nuclear Energy Production Study. House Bill 139, Wyoming Veterans Memorial Highway. And the Appropriations Committee is also meeting immediately upon adjournment today to consider four bills. And, Mr. Chair, President, I'm looking for my notice, see if somebody's got their Wednesday JAC notice. Maybe on that bill, too. Thank you. So upon adjournment, we'll be considering House Bill 5, University Revenue Bond Supplemental Coverage, House Bill 237, State Archives Storage Study, and House Bill 127, Engrossed School Finance Recalibration. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you, Senator Hines.
Mr. President, your committee number 3, Revenue, will meet 15 minutes after the noon recess tomorrow, February 10, to consider House Bill 153, Engrossed Agriculture Gas Tax Refund Program, House Bill 254, Engrossed Property Taxation Appeals, and the House Bill 255, Veterans Tax Exemptions.
Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, your committee number 9, Minerals, will meet Friday, 15 minutes after adjournment, up in room S18 to discuss the following House bills. House Bill 260, Industrial Siting Financial Resources. House Bill 93, School Uniform Student Count Deletion. House Bill 204, Patriotism in the Classroom. House Bill 227, Education, Constitution, Instruction. And if time allows, House Bill 144, School District Bonds.
Other announcements? Senator Case.
Mr. Chairman, or Mr. President, thank you very much. Your Corporations Committee number 7 will meet tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. in S19. We're going to hear House Bill 63, Engrossed Subdivision Water Study, House Bill 81, Engrossed Vacant Land, House Bill 136, Engrossed Appointments to County Commissioner Vacancy, and House Joint Resolution 5, Engrossed County-City Consolidation.
Other announcements? Seeing none, committee chairs, you just received a memo. I would hope that you would take a look at that. That will take no more than 10 minutes of your time right after we adjourn. Are there any any more announcements? You've heard the motion. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. The Senate shall stand adjourned until 10 a.m. tomorrow morning, February 10th. We are adjourned.